Welcome to Slice of Life. Because a bite was not enough, you've listened to Brenda's Bites for years, and now Brenda is expanding her show to include lifestyle happenings from around the region. Now here's your host, Brenda Alacy.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of Slice of Life on your Sunday Fun Day. Thanks so much for tuning in this Sunday. And we have some interesting things coming up. You know, a lot of good shows coming up as we get into the holiday season. And would you believe we are just a week away from Local Restaurant Week? So we'll preview what's coming up with Local Restaurant Week with the guru herself, Krista Hobart, will be in our second segment. But in the first segment, it's a pleasure to have an encore appearance by Dr. David Montesanti, who is one of the physicians and ophthalmologists at Eye Care and Vision Associates, also known as ECVA. And they will keep you focused on your eyesight, no pun intended. Dr. Montesanti, great to have you back. Good morning.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always great to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you here. And you make something that can be pretty scary to think about, any sort of eye problems, understandable, and you help us understand it in layman's terms, what's going on. So you've been on the show a few times. You've been on our sister station with Buffalo Means Business.
We sure have.
But it's great to have you back here. And as we approach, you know, the colder weather that invariably will come, do you find that with eye problems, Dr. Montesanti, there are certain allergies that you come upon? Is there a ragwood season, for instance?
Yeah, there sure is, and thanks for bringing that up. But the point about the eyeball you mentioned a minute ago, a lot of people are squeamish about the eyeball.
Yes.
You know, even physicians, ER physicians, other physicians we talk with and see will say the same thing. Oh, I can handle the heart disease all day long, but when I see an eyeball, geez, I just don't know what it is. And so we do have ophthalmologists and quote-unquote eye experts out there that can help. But to your point, absolutely. You know, allergies get all of us, me included. You know, in the spring, we have certain pollens that are out there, and we breathe them into our nasopharynx through our nose, and they cause itching and tearing and sneezing and the whole works. The same thing happens in the fall, especially ragweed here in Western New York. With ragweed allergy, like other allergies, we get something we call an IgE-mediated hypersensitivity. In English, it means there are antibodies in our body that were made teleologically from long ago to fight off things like helminthic worms, of all things.
Ooh.
Well, we just don't have worms anymore.
Thankfully.
So these IgE antibodies, right, are floating around with basically nothing to do. If they just so happen to recognize this allergen, this ragweed pollen, is foreign, they'll activate. And when they attach to it and they activate, they degranulate. They cause cells to release these chemicals, one of which is histamine, that causes all the stuff we hate, sneezing and runny nose and watery eyes and, you know, just feeling blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we run to the counter and grab our antihistamines to try to help out. In the eye, it's sometimes tricky to determine, especially if you're not at your eye doctor, whether it's truly an allergy or something else, like infection, say pink eye, or even dry eyes can mimic allergies. As a general rule of thumb, though, I say if it itches like crazy, and when you're done itching the eyeballs and rubbing them, you want to itch them again a minute later, it's probably allergies.
Okay, so that's kind of the hallmark. That's the one thing that you know that's probably the culprit.
Yep.
Good to know. And so do you generally prescribe drops, or what would be the solution here?
And that's one mainstay of treatment are drops. Drops work a couple different ways. One, in blocking these histamines that are released for the allergy. And two, as an antihistamine, meaning once the histamines are released, some of these drops go directly to the target cells and can shut down the response. So that red, sort of irritated, itchy eye with a clear, runny discharge, and it's usually accompanied with sneezing or nose itch, is a sign. And these drops we can prescribe do wonders.
It's amazing how you can attack certain things. And especially, you don't have to do it systemically. You're doing it right in the eye, which is where the problem is. So does it act that much quicker because you're putting it right in the eye?
Yeah, it both acts quicker and it's local, right? You're not treating your whole body. There's no, you know, fatigue or tiredness you might get with some of those oral antihistamines.
Yes.
And it works quick, 10 minutes roughly to start.
We're talking with Dr. David Montesanti, who is with Eye Care and Vision Associates. You've also heard it referred to as ECVA. You may have heard Sandy Beach on our sister station, WBEN, touting the incredible work they do at ECVA. They see you, the doctor sees you from start to finish. There's a great support staff. You can even get glasses and contact lenses at Eye Care and Vision Associates. It's one-stop, full service, and fully staffed, too, which is nice. I am a patient, and a very happy patient, Dr. Montesanti.
Great.
I appreciate everything you and your colleagues have done for me, and I'm looking at you wearing my contacts. Generally, I look at you with four eyes, this time with two eyes, but I have on my my contacts today. And I've been wearing glasses since I was a nine-year-old kid, and I've been wearing contacts since I was 19. Boy, back in the day, you may remember this. They were like little hard discs. And if you forgot to put that solution in to soak them overnight, they were like little potato chips the next morning.
Yep, I remember.
Not able to use them. But now the evolution of even contact lenses over the many years I've worn them have just kind of amazed me, because my eye doesn't really get tired or itchy. And my eyes can breathe through, you know, these lenses, which I'm sure you can explain. Why
sure.
is there? Why are they so much more comfortable all these years later?
No, that's a great point for sure. Just like all fields of medicine, ophthalmology has progressed and advanced over the years, and none more so probably than in contact lenses. We all remember, you know, as students in ophthalmology, the hard lenses that years ago. They were great. You know, you saw wonderful. You put them in your eyeballs. You didn't need your glasses. Everybody's happy. Well, a couple problems. They were rigid.
Yes.
They were thick. They didn't breathe well. They didn't cover the stem cells, so that was a nice point about them. But every blink, you'd kind of cut across the edge of the contact lens. It was uncomfortable. With the invention of the softer, larger lenses, the lens fits under the upper eyelid, so there isn't a blinking ridge you'd have to get over with each eye blink, so that made it more comfortable. They became thinner. The DK index, which is a measure of how well they breathe, went up, so the breathability was great, and so the oxygen transmission from our environment into the surface of our eyeball was increased, and they're just plain comfortable.
Much more so. It's like night and day. I remember as a kid when I wore them, sometimes I would keep them in too long and I ended up with a corneal abrasion. And I was very careful even at that time to make sure my hands were clean and make sure I cleaned them every night. You have to have good hygiene habits with contact lenses. You can't take that for granted. It kind of flips me out when I see people put them in their mouth and then put them in their eye. And it's like, oh my God, I can imagine, Doc. But it is great to know that there is an evolution, especially with something like contacts. How long do you think one should wear contact lenses in a day, for example?
Great. We like, as a general rule of thumb, as ophthalmologists, to say as little as possible. How's that? Meaning, we know you're going to wear them. You have to wear them at work. Some people wear them going out.
Right.
But take breaks. No one should ever sleep in them. So no matter what it says on the box, no matter what your eye doctor tells you, not that I'm saying you should go against what they tell you, but we shouldn't be sleeping in contact lenses. That DK index, that breathability, although great, doesn't work so well when your eyelids are closed.
Mm-hmm.
So without the breathability, the stem cells that need the oxygen just can't get it. Case in point is that if you look through the literature, there is a 20-fold increase. So it's 20 times more likely for you to develop a corneal ulcer, which can be vision-threatening, by sleeping in your contact lenses as opposed to not sleeping in them.
Oh, simply not worth it.
Exactly right.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah, and hygiene as well.
Yeah, you pointed out hygiene is important, right? Keep them clean. Don't put them in your mouth, obviously.
Right.
I like, personally, the dailies. You can throw them out when you're done. You just My 14-year-old daughter tosses them on the floor, and I end up picking them up the next day. Point is,
right.
She doesn't sleep in them, and it works well. And from a cost standpoint, in the old days, it may have been more expensive to do that, but nowadays, not so much.
Yeah, it's amazing how affordable they've become. And really, I'm so pleased that I can tolerate them, because I've been wearing them for so many years. But one of the issues you often see for folks who say they just can't tolerate contacts anymore is something called dry eye, which I know you must treat probably almost on a daily basis, right, Doc? You and your colleagues?
I think that's the most common diagnosis we have in all of ophthalmology is dry eyes. And it's not a single entity. It's an umbrella term that incorporates a whole bunch of different changes in the eyeball where they're not lubricated like they're supposed to be. What I get a lot from patients is that, geez, Doc, my eyes are watering. I'm dripping water, you know, every few hours I water dripping. And I look in there and I say, hey, your eyes are dry. And I get this strange look back, like, well, how can they be dry if they're dripping constantly?
Right. Seems contradictory.
Absolutely. So I liken that to the swimmers, right? Swimmers have dry skin, but they're in the water all day long, right? So how can they have dry skin if they're in the water? And the answer to that is that the pool water washes away the oils from their skin. So their skin gets dry, and they don't need more water on their skin. They need lotion. Same with the eyeballs. If the center part of your eyeball says it's dry and sends a signal to the lacrimal gland will pour out water and wash away all the good oils, just to make the eye wet. So the treatment for that is not to tear like that, is to put in artificial tears usually. There are things like punctal plugs and Ocuserts and prescription drops. There are many things you can do to treat the dry eyes. But we'd base that on your examination. We'd need to see what type of dry eyes you have, mucus, oil, or water deficiency, and what we can best do to fit you into the right treatment regimen.
Is that something that invariably happens with age?
You hate to say invariably, but it's way more common as we get older. Absolutely.
It is. So that's why some people can wear contacts when they're 60 and some people can't when they're 40, for instance.
Exactly right. If contact lenses induce some inflammation or need a higher amount of lubricant to stay comfortable, and we lose that lubricant as we get older. You're right. It's a tougher for older people to wear contact lenses, for sure.
There are other reasons that people get dry eye, though, right? I mean, could it be medication side effects, perhaps? Or what other reasons would contribute to dry eye?
Yeah, absolutely, other reasons. And one we mentioned earlier, we talked about allergies, right?
Right.
And those antihistamines. Well, they're great about great for stopping sneezing and blocking the itch, but they decrease the aqueous, the watery part of our tear, so we can get drier just by using antihistamines. And there are many medicines, diuretics, et cetera, that can do the same thing.
You know, Jack, we talk a lot about the obesity epidemic in this country, and I think certainly in this region, there is an epidemic as well. We certainly have a lot of great food in this area. I live to eat, but the reality is that there are many folks who probably are at an unhealthy weight, which may contribute to diabetes. That can affect the eye as well. Do you see the consequences of that on a regular basis at your practice?
I do. And unfortunately, as a tertiary care physician, meaning an ophthalmologist, I would see the end of the road sometimes.
Oh.
So many changes. The diabetes, I think we've talked before in previous shows, those little capillaries that feed our retina, they need to stay healthy and open. And the high elevated blood sugar that we see in people with diabetes can cause a decrease in the function or the ability for those capillaries to hold on. And if they rupture and break, no oxygen flow to the retina. And that's where it starts, and it seems to get worse from there.
And when that happens, the person who has the rupture or the hemorrhage, their vision is decreased, right, in acuity, is that right?
It can be, and sometimes permanently. Also, we can see it in a case where a patient would have these small ruptures and the small early signs without noting it visually.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we mandate a once-a-year visit for all our patients who have diabetes.
That's such good advice, too, because you may not realize something's going on if you don't have a doctor look at it.
Exactly right. So not all of these have symptoms that are easily identifiable.
Right. And, you know, I'm so glad you brought that up, Dr. Montesani, because, you know, we talk about having regular checkups for so many different things, especially as we get older and hit certain thresholds with age and different diagnoses that we should have, or different diagnostic testing we should have. So how often should somebody come in for an eye exam, a thorough eye exam by an ophthalmologist?
No, great point. And it varies throughout our life. Usually by age 3, so 3 years old, we can get a pretty darn good exam.
Really? That early, huh?
Things, right, exactly, like the retina and the optic nerve, and looking for things like amblyopia, which is where one eye works better than the other, and even check for glasses. Then in young adulthood, we get another exam to make sure things are going well. And assuming there are no problems with that patient, we don't see them till later in adulthood, usually. Right around the age 40 to 45, and many of our listeners will respect this, is we start to lose our near vision, right? We call it presbyopia. So that's another good time for an eye exam. And then as we get older, we generally, after age 60, see people once a year, because things like glaucoma, dry eyes, cataracts, and diabetes all show up, and they can show up later in life. And so we take a careful exam as the patients get older, just to make certain.
You know, I've heard the old saying, eyes are the window to the soul. And I think about, you talk about hearing and touching and all the different senses that we have. I cannot imagine not being able to see well, even though I don't see well without help. But thankfully, there is help. I can wear my contact lenses or my glasses. And I've even gotten a beautiful pair of sunglasses, prescription sunglasses at your place.
Right.
So there are ways to really enjoy life and see the beauty of life. I know you recently returned from Arizona, and again, you look at those magnificent mountains and the red and the colors and, you know, around the Sedona area, and you think, my gosh, I can't imagine not being able to see it. And we take it for granted. And yet it's so important to make eye exams, part of our regular health routine. You must feel like you must tell people all the time, you just can't take it for granted.
Agreed. And 95% of the time when a patient comes in, we can see and tell them things are just great. And we're happy doing it. But it's that 5% or sometimes less that we pick up early. We wouldn't have picked up without the routine eye exam. Your point earlier about when should you come in? Anytime something doesn't seem right. No one's going to browbeat you or give you a hard time for calling, especially our office.
We'd be happy
to see you.
Yeah.
But anytime something doesn't seem right, get in. And then those other points, every year after age 60, absolutely.
Good advice. You know, Doc, too, you're so well qualified to talk about this other thing, too, because if something were to happen, perhaps you're involved in an auto accident or you're out playing softball and you get beamed in the eye with a ball or other trauma that may occur. Sometimes some freakish things happen. you're able to help people surgically repair perhaps the orbital bone or maybe some other issue associated with the eye.
Yeah, that's right. And those are sometimes devastating injuries, you know, both a motor vehicle accident and, like you mentioned, softball, the most common sports-related accident is a baseball or softball. It can hit the orbit or the eyeball. So some patients will get the orbit looked at and say, hey, your orbit is just fine, and they go home, not realizing, well, inside the orbit is that darn eyeball we want to get you into to make sure. So both the bones around the eyeball and the eyeball itself and all the adnexal tissue, which is the optic nerve and the muscles, need a good thorough examination. So if you do get into any sort of injury, whether what seems like a mild motor vehicle accident or bad eye rubbing or a sports injury like a hockey puck if you're not wearing your cage or a softball or baseball injury, we want to see you because there might be things we need to do.
Right. And sometimes you do something silly. Like I remember one time I was opening up some mail and I dropped it and it sort of pushed against my eye. I thought, gee, should I have this looked at? You know, I'm so wary of anything wrong happening with my eyes that I always want to have it looked at. So as you say, better safe than sorry. Give always a call. And the beauty of Eye Care and Vision Associates, not only do you have these magnificent doctors who, as Dr. Montesani has been saying over the past 15 minutes or so, explains things in a way that we can understand as lay people. And all of the doctors I've met at this practice have that skill, have that great bedside manner. And the beauty is that they're located throughout the region. The location I go to most often is right here in Williamsville, 811 Maple Road, I should say in the Amherst area, 811 Maple Road near North Forest. Also, if you're in the South Towns, there's a location at 3712 Southwestern Boulevard in Orchard Park. If you're in the city, check it out at the Elmwood Village at 932 Elmwood Avenue, really centrally located for so many people. And then if you're up in the Falls, it's on Plaza Drive in Niagara Falls, New York. Doc, you also have optical shops. Is it true that they're in each of your locations?
Yeah, we designed it that way so that each patient would have a real simple way to look at their eyewear or eye care. We have fully staffed contact lens fitters in each office and, of course, large optical shops with a wide variety of glasses.
I've got to give a shout-out to my pal Nancy over at your optical shop on Maple and North Forest. She's picked out some primo glasses for me, and I can't tell you the number of compliments I get on these really cool sunglasses that Nancy picked out. So they'll give you an objective opinion. You can try on a bunch of frames, everything from designer frames to any type of frame that you can imagine. The variety is amazing with the frames too.
Agreed. And fantastic that it is. You know,
we have
contracts with multiple and varied eyewear companies throughout the nation. We can get samples of each type in. We sort of show people what we have and see what they like.
All the trendy ones are there. It's great to go in to a place where they know what they're doing from top to bottom. Eye Care and Vision Associates. Dr. David Montesani, as always, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having me again, Brenda.
My pleasure. And by the way, what a cool number they have here, too. If you want to call any of the offices, you simply call 631-EYES. Go figure, huh? 631-EYES. And they will direct you to the location that is most convenient for you, whether you're near your home or near your office, and they'll take good care of you at Eye Care and Vision Associates. We'll be back right after this.
Paid actors illustrating actual clients. Prior results do not guarantee similar outcome. Each case is unique.
When a car hit me, I called Salino and Barnes. They got me $6 million, 24 times the insurance offer.
I'm Steve Barnes. Is your accident case worth more than the insurance company says? Call us. You might be surprised.
After my motorcycle accident, Salino and Barnes got me $1.5 million, 12 times more than insurance offered.
I'm Ross Salino. What's your case really worth? Call us now and find out.
After I was rear-ended, insurance offered $100,000. Salino and Barnes got me $800,000.
After my car accident, insurance offered $50,000. Salino and Barnes got me $750,000.
Is your case worth more than the insurance company says? Call us. You might be surprised.
They got me over $600,000, 9 times more than insurance offers.
Salino and Barnes, injury attorneys, call 888-8888.
Main Street, Buffalo.
Millions of fans agree. This is the holiday tradition that rocks. Trans-Siberian Orchestra, live and concert. The best of TSO and more, presented by Hallmark Channel. Saturday, December 15th, 2 shows, 3 and 7:30 p.m. at Key Bank Center. A dazzling multimedia production that has inspired a generation. Siberian Orchestra performs their greatest hits
Live, Saturday, December 15th. Two shows, 3 and 7:30 p.m. at KeyBank Center. Reserve seats on sale now at KeyBank Center box office and tickets.com. Don't miss Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Saturday, December 15th.
You've tried hard, but you just need a little help to get rid of that unwanted fat. I'm Buffalo Skin Doctor, board-certified dermatologist and medical director of Healthy Complexion Spa by Western New York Dermatology, Dr. Michael Nazareth. We can help. It's called Sculpture. We use laser heat energy to safely remove fat from those stubborn areas. It takes less than an hour, and your consultation is free. Healthy Complexion Spa by Western New York Dermatology, Spindrift Drive in Williamsville. We treat your skin. You treat yourself.
Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas, Super Bowl champion Keith O'Neill, college football phenom Alex Newts. Aside from sports, what do they all have in common? They all have experience with someone suffering with mental illness, and they're all supporting the third annual Courage to Come Back Awards dinner, October 18th at Samuel's Grand Manor. Google Friendship Foundation Buffalo for more info. Presented by Russell J. Salvatore, Channel 7, and radio.com.
Thanks for tuning in to Slice of Life. Now back to your hostess with the mostest, Brenda Alacy.
Welcome back to this edition of Slice of Life. Appreciate you carving out some time for us. And we appreciate Kevin Carr, the K-Car, pushing all the buttons for us week in and week out. We couldn't drive the show without the K-Car. Hey, speaking of week in and week out, it seems like we've been talking about this for a while, and it's finally here. Local Restaurant Week kicks off tomorrow, October 15th. And with us is none other than the guru herself, Local Restaurant Week organizer, Krista Hobart. Good morning, Krista.
Good morning. You are too kind, Brenda.
But it's all true because people have no idea what it must be like for you to have to put this all together.
It gets
twice
a
year.
Yeah, it gets a little frantic in the days prior, but
yes.
Once it starts, it's all downhill.
It's downhill because it's the way we're going to be running after
exactly,
we eat this much.
Exactly. But,
so tell us, first of all, let's just kind of put the basic premise out there. How does Local Restaurant Week work?
So in order to participate for a restaurant, you need to be locally owned and operated with no ties to a national franchise or chain. So that means all the restaurants that participate in our Local Restaurant Week event are all locally owned and operated. So they're your neighbors, your friends. They're just your neighbors that own these restaurants. So the mom and pops.
And this happens twice a year in the spring and in the fall. Obviously, this is the
right.
Fall edition.
Right.
And you're celebrating a milestone with this. This is your 10th year, but 20th edition.
I know. And people are still hungry for more.
Oh, I like
think
it.
I've said that a couple times.
Yeah. But it still works, Krista.
Yep.
It's fair to say that the novelty hasn't worn off, right? You have more restaurants than ever, it seems.
Yeah, we started with 60 restaurants back in 2009, and this is our 20th event. Like you said, it's been 10 years, so 20 local restaurant weeks. And we have over 200 restaurants that are participating this upcoming week. So, yeah, the event has grown a lot, and as a matter of fact, we're the fifth largest one in the nation now, which is quite remarkable considering the size of our city. Yeah,
exactly. Impressive numbers. As you've mentioned in the past, there are big cities that one would expect, New York, L.A., Chicago.
Right.
But Buffalo comes in at number 5.
And I know.
It does speak to how hungry people are in this town, I think.
It does. And we also have a lot of locally owned and operated restaurants, which
yes.
is not the same in all other parts of the country. You know, if you've been born here and this is kind of all you know, it really is different. There's a lot of chain restaurants in most big cities. You know, we were just really lucky that we've got lots of mom and pops, ones that have been handed down from generation to generation, so that'll become part of people's families.
Oh,
really.
For sure. It's a legacy, I think it's fair to say. Do you find that the fall edition is busier than the spring edition, for example, or isn't there any way to kind of measure that?
You know, they're about the same in terms of numbers on our end. You know, we always, the last few years, we've kind of hovered around 220 restaurants, and it will be the same this year. So it's difficult for me to tell in terms of numbers from the actual restaurants because we don't track that. But the number of participating restaurants is about the same spring and fall.
I know every time you do this, you come up with a different twist. So this year, you're doing some things with hashtags, right?
Yeah, we're doing a billboard campaign, which is pretty exciting. It's called Snap and Share. So while you're out dining at participating restaurants, we're asking people to take photos of themselves out to eat and then upload them on social media using the hashtag Local Restaurant Week. And then you might just see your smiling, hungry face on billboards across town. So we've got 11 digital billboards the week of Local Restaurant Week.
Oh, that'll be great.
Yeah,
make sure you don't
really
have any spinach in your teeth when you take that shot.
We'll make sure we filter that out.
Oh, okay. Oh, so the magic of editing. It's not just in radio.
Right,
it's good
right.
to know.
Yeah.
Krista, you have restaurants to participate all over the region, right? It's not right. just in the city or in the immediate suburbs.
Right.
This really extends all over Western New York.
It is all over Western New York. I know last week you had one of our brand new restaurants in on the show, and he's from Lewiston.
Right.
We've got some, I forget what this furthest south. It's definitely further south than East Aurora. And then we also have all the way over to Batavia. I think that's the furthest one east that we have at Batavia Downs. Yeah.
That is so great. It's fun to go to the website, too, which is localrestaurantweek.com,
right.
fittingly enough. And it's great to kind of peruse the menus. And I like to do that in general. I love to look at restaurant menus no matter what time of year it is.
It's good reading material.
It is. It is. And gives you a lot of food for thought.
Yeah.
But it really helps you understand how different the restaurants are in this area, because you would think there'd be a lot of duplication. But what I find is that there are a lot of restaurants that have their own niche.
Right. That's exactly right. So you've got the standard Italian ones, you know,
right.
that have kind of been around forever, and you've got some pizza places, and you've got sushi, and then, of course, you've got German. We just had Schwabel's registered just the other day.
Wonderful.
And kind of really every Sun Cuisine, Burmese
I was
going to
say the Burmese, so, yeah. When you think about how that's evolved over the past several years.
And there's
years.
Several Burmese and Thai restaurants that actually are participating in Local Restaurant Week this time. So
have you noticed that, Krista, since you started this from day one 10 years ago, that you do see different ethnicities being represented?
Yeah, the Thai one and Burmese for sure. I don't know that any of those were actually involved 10 years
That's
ago.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
it's not a novelty anymore when you see Sun or some of the other ones that are popping up.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Oh, another. The scope of food offered in this area, I think, is tremendous and speaks to what you were saying about how even though Buffalo is much smaller in population than these major mega cities, we can compete on that level. Now, you're a well-traveled woman, both domestically and internationally. How do you rate Buffalo in terms of a food town?
I think it's a great food town. As a matter of fact, I like to share the story of when I first moved here. I'm originally from Minneapolis. Oddly enough, I asked my husband on my first trip here to take me to the restaurant that best described Buffalo in terms of a restaurant, and he took me to Chef's.
Oh,
which participates in Local Restaurant Week. But, I mean, now that I've been here for years now, of course, but Chef's really does embody Buffalo. So he was right on with that one.
Did you have spaghetti parm?
I probably had spaghetti
parm.
Yeah,
did.
Because I'm sure I said just order whatever the locals would order, and that would have been spaghetti parm with a glass of Chianti.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, you have to have the bib on.
Yep, yeah. I definitely remember wearing the bib.
That is the quintessential Buffalo thing for sure. And
yeah.
you could make that case for a lot of different restaurants,
right.
you know, depending on what they're serving in this town. And that's what makes it so appealing in so many ways, that there are, as you said, Krista, long-standing restaurants that are family-run, generations.
Right.
But then you also have some newer spots that are really taking off, like Gallo's, as you said, who was on last week. I think they're probably going to last a long time as well.
Yep, if you've got great food and great people that are servicing the customers, then that's the recipe for success right there for sure.
And it's not just food, because we've got about a minute left, but we should not overlook the economic impact that this Local Restaurant Week has and this whole ripple effect. As you've often said, it's not just the folks who come in and spend money in the restaurant on that given day, but also it benefits the purveyors, the people who supply everything from food to paper products and everything in between.
Right. It's a really, really big week for restaurants. And like you said, not just the restaurant owners, but the food distributors and those sorts of people. So we estimated a few years ago that it was about $8 million that circulated through the local economy the two times that we run it every year. And honestly, that number is a few years old. That was based on when we had 200 restaurants. So I'm sure that the number is a lot higher now.
Right. I bet that's a conservative estimate for sure. Well, congratulations to
you
and your crew. And thank you
Thanks.
So much for doing this. My gosh, over a decade now.
I know. I think when we started, we had no expectations really at all. And to think, I know we never thought it would be 10 years. And for sure, we never thought we'd be in the top five in the country. So it's pretty cool.
It's really a tribute to the hard work that you've put in. A tip of the chef's hat to you
Thank
and all
you.
Concerned. And Krista Hobart, Local Restaurant Week. We'll see you out dining this week. And as always, folks, thank you so much for tuning in to Slice of Life. Thanks for carving out some time, and we'll see you next week. Go Bills.
Thanks for listening. Brenda will be back next Slice of Life Sunday at 10:30 on ESPN 1520.